Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Tonight, I'm going to talk to an award-winning blogger and mental health author from Cork, from Ireland. Dara Fleming has an MA in linguistics and a BA in applied psychology, and he has a head full of notions. Dara's debut in nonfiction is called Lonely Boy, which is a collection of essays on mental health. Arrived in November 2022. Sadly, though, Dara is also known for being targeted for something very dark and sinister when last year he fell victim to an online blackmailing scam. Sextortion is what they call it. And he joins me now to talk about his ordeal and his work. Dara, hi, how are you?
Hey, Niall, how's it going? How are you keeping?
Good, nice to talk to you, Dara. And let me firstly just, we'll go back in time. I'll come to the blackmailing in a few minutes because that sounds like you really went through a tough time there through the ringer.
Sorry, Niall, the connection's very bad. I don't know, I can barely hear you.
Well, I do apologise. I don't know what we can do about that. Okay, we're going to call you on a different line. She's going to call you on a different line, so I do apologise. Okay. Okay, if you want to send us a text or a WhatsApp, the number is 087-188-0008. That's 087-188-0008. You can text to WhatsApp us. But I might take one or two calls at the very end of the night as well in relation to that. Have you ever been scammed? Have you ever been in a situation like that? Have you ever been worried in a situation like that? Have you ever been the victim of any of these online scams? And there are quite a lot of them around. They seem to prey on vulnerable people, generally speaking. Not always women, but primarily women they target. And it's usually coming from an internet cafe somewhere like that. Sorry, I think I have Dara back now. Sorry, Dara, are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you now. That's way better.
Oh, that's good. Dara, listen, let me go back just a little bit of time as well, because I was looking at your book there, Lonely Boy, a collection of essays on mental health. First, how did you end up in that situation? How did you end up in a situation where obviously you very much focused on mental health? I mean, was that something you always had an interest in?
Not really. Like, it started... So up until the age of 17, I'd never really heard of mental health. It didn't really come up in conversations. It didn't come up in school. And then my best friend took his own life. Wow. He was a year ahead of me in school. So he took his own life at the age of 18. And that was my introduction to mental health. And my introduction was, if it gets really bad, it can end up, you know, taking your life. And I was absolutely devastated, you know, grieving my friend.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
And then from there, you know, I suffered with my own depression for years, went to college, decided to do applied psychology because I wanted to learn more about, you know, different aspects of mental health. And really the motivation was like to find out more about depression and suicide so that I could, you know, learn how to hopefully avoid going to that place and try and help people to not go to that place. So that's kind of how it started for me. And that's,
yeah,
because you know,
it's quite weird, isn't it? The way we treat mental health, because if you've got, you know, I don't know, even a pimple on your arm, or you've got a rash on your leg, or you immediately go to a doctor, or you look up online to see how to fix it, or you get a remedy for it, or you go off and get a cream to fix it, or if you've got a sore leg, you go and get an x-ray or whatever it is. But our mind and our brain is the most complicated organ in our body. And yet when there's something wrong with it, we tend not to do anything about it. We tend to just struggle through.
Yeah, I think it just comes from a place of like what the unknown is quite scary. Like, so, because if we have a broken leg, we can see what the issue is and we generally know what to do to fix it. But when it comes to the brain, you know, we don't have that knowledge naturally. And then there's, you know, we're dealing with a lot of stigma in mental health. And, you know, in this country in particular, like the history of like, you know, putting like just throwing stuff under the carpet and not talking about it because there was a lot of shame and stigma attached to it.
Well, of course, people were put into asylums, essentially, many, many years ago.
Exactly.
You know, they were crazy, and that was the end of it, and we didn't deal with it at all. Electric shock therapy probably was the best you could come up with in those days. But nowadays, we deal with things more sympathetically, and we have a better understanding of why people feel the way they do. Are we treating mental health properly? Because I mentioned earlier on the show that there was a great article in the Irish Examiner going back about 7 or 8 years ago where a young journalist went to a doctor in Cork, or which went to 19 doctors, I think, in Cork, pretending to be depressed. And each one of them just went, oh, here you go, here's a box of pills. So are we treating it properly? Or are we just kind of, is it easy just to give somebody a box of pills?
Yeah, I think what's happening is like we don't have, the demand doesn't meet the supply. So like it's an easy like temporary fix to give someone medication, but medication should be used as a tool in a more like multidisciplinary focus on, like, you know, you're getting treatment with counseling, the antidepressants are there as a tool, but we're using, rather than using them as a tool to treat symptoms, we're using them as something like a cure, which isn't the case. The same way, like, if I have a really bad case of the flu and I take painkillers, they're going to reduce the symptoms, but they're not going to get rid of the symptoms. So I think that's what we're doing with medication. I think it has to be far more holistic approach where we look at the root cause of things like depression, because unless you actually look and dig into why you're becoming depressed, you're just masking symptoms up to a point.
And does psychiatry work? Because I've heard some, I've watched documentaries where some of the best psychiatrists in the world will tell you it doesn't actually work, even though they're psychiatrists. I mean, to some level, I suppose there's a level of pseudoscience to it. But in some ways, for a lot of people, you know, to be able to tell a stranger how they feel sometimes gets it off their chest and makes them feel better or whatever. And particularly if those people are good at listening and good at interpreting what they're saying. But does psychiatry, generally speaking, does it work for people if they say, look, every American person has their own shrink? You know, so does it work? Does it make a difference to people's lives?
I definitely went to counselling and therapy myself, and it worked for me. And I think on, like, you kind of take it on an individual case, like the same way with physical health, like, running isn't for me, but I like lifting weights, and that's how I look after my physical health. And it's just like,
that's important.
And I think very much like in the same vein as with my mental health these days, where I'm like, it just depends on where you're at and what you need. And some people do need to talk and some people don't need to talk. And you take your mental health by your own individual needs, and we're all different. So in that sense, it's going to work for some people. It's not going to work for everyone.
And you made a really good point there. Your physical health is really important when it comes to your mental health, because if your physical health is not good, you're not going to be able to fight your mental health very well, are you?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm always like banging, like my mark on the internet, I'm always banging on about like how I exercise purely for my mental health. Obviously, it has physical health benefits, but I'm like, I'm here.
Yeah, you got to feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because if you feel low in energy, it's going to make you feel worse, isn't it, really? I mean, I find that myself on days where I have a lot to do. You know, if I... Probably why I drink so much Red Bull, which is probably not a good thing. I shouldn't be advertising that. But the more energy I have, the better I feel in my own head as well. I mean, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get to the darker side of what happened to you personally yourself, and you fell victim to an online blackmailing scam. How did that start, or where did that start?
Yeah, so it was last summer. I was in Cork, and I matched a girl on Hinge, which is just a dating app.
Yeah.
And this girl, her name was Tracy, from Cork, went to UCC, had all the, you know, necessary details for you to kind of, from just like a very superficial perspective, to be like, this is a person who's from Cork. So then we started chatting. We're chatting on the app for a couple of weeks, and she was telling me like where she went to school and what bar she goes to. I had like a deep knowledge of Cork and was using all the slang I'd be used to. And then after a few weeks, she was like, oh, do you want to like get off the app? Cause it's just, you know, which is a natural progression. And I was like, yeah, no bother. So she suggested Snapchat, which isn't uncommon. You either kind of go for Instagram.
At no stage did you ask, sorry for interrupting, but at no stage did you think that maybe we should physically talk? You know, can I hear you? Or you, no, that didn't come into it? Or was that avoided?
Well, so you can't do that on Hinge, but you could do it on different apps. So moved to Snapchat, and then sending just regular snaps, just pictures of like, you know, selfies and messages. And then there was videos, and in the video she said my name and was just kind of doing stuff in her house, whatever. So I was like, okay, this is obvious. Like, I had no reason to believe this wasn't a real person, because they were saying my name, they're sending videos, all this kind of stuff. And then after probably a week or so on that, we like made plans to meet up, say if it was Friday, we planned to meet up the following Wednesday. So that was grand. And then she started kind of making it more like sexually explicit, sending kind of more, you know, raunchy pictures, which is fair enough. You know, I was all game for it. And then,
you're a red-blooded male. I get that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So then I started sending some back and whatever. And then that like naturally like came to a conclusion. You know, I had my weekend. And was still chatting to her throughout the weekend, just again, regular chat. But then I woke up on Monday morning and I had a message from her on Snapchat. And I opened it, and there had been like pictures of the pictures I had sent her had been taken with a different phone. and she had sent them back to me, and she was like, you have 5 seconds to say stop, or I'm going to send these to all your family. And she'd also send on screenshots of like my mother's Facebook page, some of my cousins, like with the same second name as me. And I was like, okay, obviously stop. And then, so you can ring people on Snapchat. So my phone started ringing, and it was her ringing. So I picked up, and I was like, you know, what the fuck is going on? Like, and it was a man on the other end of the phone.
Obviously, yeah, it wasn't this girl.
Obviously, yeah. Obviously, like, I kind of was drawing that conclusion. That, yeah. He had an accent, and he was like, oh, you've really good money and good jobs in Ireland. We have nothing like that here in Nigeria. I want some of that money. And I was like, come here, man. That isn't my fault. Like, I don't have any of the money you're talking about.
Yeah, who do you
like,
think you're talking
you know
to about that rich?
In Ireland. Yeah. Like, yeah.
You do realize we're feeding God, fill of all government here, don't you? Yeah. We don't have much money. Go on.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And he was like, you have to send me 2,000 euro in Bitcoin. And I goes, well, I don't have Bitcoin, and I also don't have 2,000 euro. And then he was like, why don't you have Bitcoin? And I was like, I don't, whatever. And then he started, then he was like, okay, you're going to have to get Bitcoin, and you're going to have to send it on this app. And once he said that, I hung up. And then at this point, like, I am absolutely panicking, freaking out, stressed.
Thinking your mother's going to get to see all these photographs and everything, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The walls are closing in. Like, then he rang me back, and he was very angry then. And he was like, why'd you hang up on me? And I was like, oh, I thought you taught me to, like, I thought we were finished with this conversation. And he was like, no, you have to get this app. And I was, at this point, I was like, you know what, man, send them to my mother. I don't care. Like, it'll be grand, whatever. Just send them away. I'm not sending you money. Hung up, blocked him. Then he tried to add me in a load of different kind of burner accounts, blocked all of those, went into Instagram. He had messaged me multiple accounts on Instagram. And one of them, he said, I'll reduce the price to 500. Be a good man. Don't make me ruin your life. And he tried to ring me, and I blocked him. So at this point, I'm just like blocking every account. I'm like, I'm not talking to this person anymore. So I ring my mother, and I'm lucky to have a very like supportive family, and they totally they totally get that I'm kind of creative and crazy and all that kind of crack. And I just told my mother.
What sort of conversation do you have with your mom when you're saying, listen, ma'am, if some random guy sends you photographs of me in the nip, you know, don't worry, it's okay. Is that kind of the conversation you had to have?
Yeah, I was like, look, if you get a message from an account you don't recognize and it's a picture message, don't open it because you're going to get a picture of my todger and I don't think you want to see that. Like,
no, you saw it when I was a baby, that's enough.
And she was like, right, okay, fair enough. And then I explained what happened. And then, like, it's a really stressful situation, but, like, after about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, I started to kind of come down from the panic. And for me, it was like, the worst part about it is, like, people finding out or people getting the pictures, you know, getting the pictures actually being sent out there. That was, like, the fear of people finding out about that was the worst. So, and I'm not sure, in hindsight, if this was a good or a bad idea, but it was a way to handle it. I went on Twitter and I was like, look, I'm being blackmailed for nudes. They want 2 grand. Obviously, I'm not sending them the money. So if you see my nudes, enjoy them, I suppose.
Yeah. Make a positive thing out of a negative thing. Yeah, okay, go on.
Yeah, kind of make it a little bit funny. Like, and then obviously that tweet, you know, took off. And yeah, there was a lot of different like news outlets onto me. And that kind of added to the stress because you're just being overwhelmed by like the fear of your nudes being leaked and then people wanted to talk to you. And it was
But you've kind of neutralized the problem then, haven't you? So that's a good
thing. Like, exactly. Like, as in, like, it just took all the sting out of it. I was like, okay, now if they do get leaked...
Yeah, you can send it to everyone if you want to.
People know that I know. Like, Exactly. So that was it. And then, you know, each day passed and they didn't get back onto me. No one I knew had gotten images sent to them. And luckily, to this day, they haven't sent images. But, like... really scary stuff, and the fact that like,
and it just goes how people like. Thankfully, you were brave enough to get through that, and you did the right thing, I think, in some sense by neutralizing the problem. But a lot of people would go into a panic in those situations, particularly if they're threatening to send it to their employer or whatever it is, you know, or some guys maybe who are married, you know, and or whatever, and playing the field online, and they'd pay them, and that's how these people obviously, you know. That's how they work. And most of them will always ask for Bitcoin. That's what they do so they can't get traced. And it is a huge problem, a huge sextortion, as it's called. It's a huge problem.
Yeah. And in the weeks that followed, like, loads of people got on to me saying, like, this has happened to them or it's currently happening to them. Like, I remember one person got on to me and they're like, it's happening to me now. I've already sent the money and they won't leave me alone.
No. The worst thing you can do is send the money. That's the worst thing you can
do. Because once you do that, like, they just spam you until you give them more money. Like, so.
Yep.
Luckily, I didn't send money. I reported to the guards just, you know, in terms of, for me, it was more like, so they have more accurate statistics on how often this happens. Because, like, if the guy was, as he said, if he was in Nigeria, he was using the VPN anyway, so there's no way to track him. There was no jurisdiction. There was nothing that could actually be done. But it was just to be like, this happens so often. And I, like, after it happened to me, the amount of people who reached out to me saying it's happened to them or it's happening to someone they know is shocking. Like, and it's something I wouldn't really been aware of again until it happened to me.
And it primarily, for people who are interested, primarily happens from Nigeria. These are usually internet cafes. And I'm looking at a story here, which is a tragic story online. The parents of a teenager who died by suicide are urging others to have tough conversations about sextortion scams. More or less, he did the same as you. But unfortunately, unlike you, who were brave enough to neutralize the situation and you could deal with it, he couldn't. And he took his own life. Now, the FBI investigated. It turned out there was three men in Nigeria who had done it to him. But it is a shocking, shocking story, yeah, that he ended up taking his own life over something very similar to what happened to yourself. And for some people, they could take that very badly. You dealt with that really well, from what I can see.
And, like, in particular, like, especially with teenagers, like, because they don't really have the, you know, the self-confidence or the security in their lives to know who they are and know that they're, like, I can imagine if this happened to me when I was 16, I would have been convinced my life was over. And that's kind of why I'm talking about it and I have been talking about it, just to show, like, especially young men and young women that, like, if this does happen to you, your life isn't over. Like, life will go on. People forget about things very quickly these days. The news cycle is...
But there's also a strong lesson in it too, Dara, and I keep saying this to people on a regular basis because of the world we live in now, and of course it's a very dangerous world in some sense. And Martin makes a good point. He's texting. He says, "Now, can you ask your guest to think he... Do you think he had any responsibility in making himself a target by being imprudent online?" Now, I'm not suggesting you did, Dara, but what I'm saying is it's a word of warning for people. You really need to make sure you're talking to a real person before. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with intimacy as long as it's two consenting adults, right? And sending intimate images as long as, again, it's two consenting adults. But I think in the world we live in today, I think it's always wise to be more cautious, isn't it?
No, 100%. Like, and, like, totally, like, as in, it was very embarrassing for me personally. Like, and looking back, and now the way I act in an online space now, like, I don't send pictures. And the easiest way to prevent this is abstinence. Like, just don't send intimate images of yourself to anyone. Like, that's the way to mitigate the problem.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 100%. Like.
And by the way, just to point out for those listening to, remember, of course, it is illegal to send photographs to anybody if it's uninvited. So it is illegal to do it. There was actually a case there in the paper during the week in the UK where a guy went to jail. I think he got 6 months for sending, you know, pictures of his gadget to some girl. Yeah, she didn't invite it. It was unconsensual. Yeah.
Like that, like sending stuff without consent, is absolute madness. And then equally, if it is consensual, and you then share those pictures publicly, that's also legal now. So.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But it was certainly a turning point in your life. I mean, how do you feel now? I mean, did it have a dramatic effect on you at the time? I mean, was there sleepless nights? Was there?
Yeah, like there were sleepless nights. I literally couldn't focus on work. I had to, like, you know, pull back from work and be like, I just need to process what's happened. And then, yeah, it's just being far more cautious and vigilant and not, you know, giving into what was obviously, like, quite a lonely time in my life where, like, I feel like that was something I would have done. Like, if I was in kind of a better state of mind, I probably wouldn't have been even, like, why would I send this picture? So, yeah, like, it's definitely been...
As human beings, we do stupid things sometimes out of loneliness, don't we?
Like, yeah.
And in desperation,
especially young men as well. Like, we get
what is it about us lads?
And lonely and stupid. Like,
yeah. I mean, when you look at silly videos, even on TikTok, of, you know, people doing stupid things, it's usually blokes. I don't know what it is about us.
Yeah.
We do daft things. I don't know whether that's the testosterone within us, or I don't know what creates that problem or causes that problem. But we deal with things differently to women as well, don't we? Generally speaking, when it comes to mental health, even.
Yeah, like in terms of like general mental health. Like,
yeah, I think we keep a lot to ourselves. We kind of put this bravado on. We're kind of macho. We're cool. Whereas women have bigger friend circles. They share their problems with their friends. I think they can deal with situations better than we can.
Yeah, I think we deal with it in different contexts. So like men generally won't sit down with like a cup of tea and like have a chat about their mental health. But like the amount of times I've been in dressing rooms after matches or training, and that's when men tend to express themselves or say what's bothering them. Like during the pandemic, I remember going for runs with my friends. And it was on the runs when lads would tell you how they're feeling and they're dealing with anxiety and stress. But it was rarely over like sit down, intentional conversation. It was kind of,
yeah, they don't want to make a big deal of it. It's kind of like a kind of side conversation. Yeah, because we're too cool for that. We're too macho, you know.
But I mean, at least there's places we can do it, you know, that like it's not totally being ignored. Like it's just finding the right context.
And I think we're getting better at it. There was a time where men didn't. I mean, like in my dad's day, you know, he'd be out the back garden chopping wood with the shirt off. So, but I think men are getting better at sharing their problems, and you know, and being a bit more emotional and expressing our problems a little bit better. I think we are getting better at it.
Oh, definitely. Like, and even in the, you know, 12 years since my friend died, it's night and day. Like, as in, we didn't have any clue that he was struggling because no one talked about mental health. And they were in a place where we've kind of the pendulum swung and everyone's talking about mental health, which is brilliant. But like, the thing with the time with men is we're trying to, you know, rewire a conditioning that's been there for generations and generations. So the thing we really, really need for men now is patience, because it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to happen over generations. And, you know, in 20, 30 years' time, we're really going to see the difference with how men express themselves emotionally and their mental health. It's not going to happen in a couple of years.
Well, look, if I know you've done some TEDx talks, by the way, and if people want to go online, I'm assuming it's on YouTube. It's called Creativity, the Answer to Crafting Hope. There's also your blog, Thoughts Too Big, which is what it's called. Yep. And you've got a book out called Lonely Boy. Well done to you, by the way, and all this. The book is called Lonely Boy. By the way, if people want to connect with you on Instagram or Facebook, or where's the best place to connect with you if they want to connect with you?
Yeah, like Instagram, TikTok is at Dara Fleming, just my name. But yeah, no, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
No problem. At Dara Fleming, don't worry, he won't be sending you any photographs. Okay, so
no, I won't.
He's learned his lesson. At Dara Fleming. Dara, listen, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And it's a really interesting story and a great warning for people out there, because catfishing, as they call it, well, although that's sextortion as well, is so prominent nowadays in the online world. And it's a great message to send out. Listen, Dara, thank you very much indeed for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Take care now.
Nice. Yeah, there you go. Dara Fleming. If you want to catch him, you can catch him online at Dara Fleming on whatever it is, Instagram or whatever it happens to be that you normally go for your social media.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.